friends, he's pointed out this is our third week of Advent. And Advent, as you know, means anticipation or coming. It's the time of year when we anticipate Jesus' coming. And this year, I am anticipating more than I have since I was a little kid. Not for presents, because nobody cares about you when you're 31. You don't. It's not going to be anything fancy there. But as some of you may know, I am anticipating becoming a father in the new year. In February, I'm going to be a dad. Oh, thank you. And incredibly exciting time, and I am realizing that I'm really bad at anticipation. You see, Sarah, she told me in June, she's pregnant, we're going to have a kid, that's fantastic, it's exciting, and I go online, and I track the baby's development at every stage, and I remember being so pumped when my baby got to the size of a blueberry. That was the big moment for me. Super pumped on that one, and we had the first ultrasound, and it was like literally a dot, and I'm like, oh, is that his head? And the guy's like, I don't know. It's just a peanut. So incredibly excited. I did some reading. I think it's Fatherhood for Dummies was the book, and I've been reading through that. And after some more weeks and then some more months, I got impatient. I want this baby to get here. It's been a long enough, it seems. I want this baby to come. And I realize I am not good at just waiting in that anticipation. And as we've been in that moment of anticipation, we've been meeting a lot of other families that are going through a similar journey to us. A little bit before us, a young couple that was actually previous youth kids from my last youth group. They got married like as soon as they graduated, and then like exactly 9 months later, they're like, hey, here's a kid. So they're going through this journey, and we've been going through classes and like tours of the hospital. We've been meeting a lot of other people. And we found it's interesting to see there's so many different ways for people to get to this point in their journey. We've met some very young couples, some older couples, couples who have struggled with infertility and have gone through interventions, and others who have adopted. And there's all these ways that they get to this point in their story. And we see that here in the Bible, too. We talked about Mary last week. She had a very unique way of getting to this point in her story. She skipped a step, a really important one, usually. we'll leave it there. And we have... We have Elizabeth, and she has been struggling with infertility. And her husband, Zachariah, for years and years and years, had been wanting to have a child and didn't happen for them. And anticipating becoming a parent for someone struggling with infertility becomes incredibly difficult. Many of you here know that difficulty, because every month you get excited and hopeful that God's going to bless you with a kid. Every month you're wrecked and crushed by disappointment. And this is where we meet Zechariah and Elizabeth in their story, and they're no longer anticipating God to bless them with a kid. They've given up hope for that. You ever get to the point where you just give up hope on something? Maybe you had childhood dreams to make the NBA one day, and you're 30, and you realize that's not happening. 5'8", Steve, it's not going to work. I remember when every Christmas growing up, I really wanted a pet for Christmas. I really wanted a dog, but like a cat would have done fine, or a guinea pig or a hamster, like something fluffy that I could hold. That's what I really wanted. Every year I asked my mom, Mom, I really want a pet for Christmas. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And I'd get like a stuffed dog or something stupid like that. And thanks, Mom. And one year I go to my parents and I'm like, Mom, like I really, really want a pet. And my parents are like, well, Steve, this might be a really good Christmas for you. And I'm like, what, really? My parents wouldn't just get my hopes up for no reason, would they? Of course not. My parents love me. They wouldn't get me excited about something when they're not going to give me a pet. So this Christmas, I'm so excited. Of course, my parents wouldn't get me excited about a pet if they weren't going to give me a pet. So, under the tree, okay, I don't see anything moving there, but fine. Open up some presents and get to the last one and nothing. I'm like, Mom, what the heck? Why did you tell me about this and get my hopes up? And she's like, well, Steve, we got one more present for you. Oh, where's the puppy going to be running around through the corner? Come on. And then they come with this small box. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe a hamster's in there. It's fine. Okay, come on. And I open it up, and then sure enough, it's a box of sea monkeys. You guys, you know these? These are the dumbest things. What it is, if you were around in the 90s, they had this like plastic aquarium, and it had like a package of sea monkey powder, and you put it in the water, and then it's sure enough, a couple weeks later, you get these little tiny white things that swim around. They don't look like that. They look really dumb. I get my hopes up. I'm anticipating pet. And I get sea monkeys. But sure enough, fine, I'll give it a go. So, a plastic aquarium out, fill it up, nothing really happens. And a couple weeks later, I start to see some little white, tiny things swimming around. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's, all right. And then, like, a month in, I swear one of them was like a third of a centimeter big, which was huge for sea monkeys. And I was getting kind of excited about this. I had my own civilization of sea monkeys, and I was their overlord, and it was awesome. So I really loved my sea monkeys. And then one day, I get home about a month later, I got home from school, and my mom had been cleaning. And while she was cleaning, she knocked over the sea monkey civilization, and hundreds of sea monkeys all on the living room floor are now dead. Oh, I was so hopeful for this bond that I had with my sea monkeys, and so hopeful for pets, and it just led to disappointment every single time. You get my hope up and disappointment. And that's kind of a funny example, but I think many of us are at a point where we anticipate God to do something big, or life's going to turn around and things are going to get better, and sometimes it just seems like they don't. And we learn to stay away from anticipating, and we stay away from hope because we fear disappointment. And that's exactly where Zechariah was when we start this story. Zechariah wanted to be a father, but didn't happen for him. Years and years of trying, wasn't going to happen that way. He ended up becoming a priest. It was his turn to go to the temple. And it became his turn to go into the sanctuary to burn the incense while the other priests stood outside praying. And that's where we pick up the story in Luke 1, 11 to 14. It says this, "While Zechariah was in the sanctuary, an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right of the incense altar. Zechariah was shaken and overwhelmed with fear when he saw him. But the angel said, 'Don't be afraid, Zechariah. God has heard your prayer. Your wife, Elizabeth, will give you a son, and you're to name him John. You'll have great joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth.'" So here's Zechariah. He's seen an angel. It's probably quite confusing, a little bit shocking. And angel says, "Zechariah, you're going to be a dad. You're going to have a kid." And says, "Well, you know, angel, how's that going to happen? Because I'm pretty old, and my wife's pretty old. How's this going to work?" He asked that question. It's a very similar question to what Mary asked when the angel said, "Mary, you're gonna become a mom." But to Mary, the angel responded very kindly. He said, "Mary, the Holy Spirit's going to come upon you. You're going to become a mom. That's great. Oh, awesome." And then Zechariah asked pretty much the same question. And the same angel says, "Well, since you don't believe me, I'm going to shut your mouth shut. You're not going to be able to talk for 9 months until the baby's born." Darn. Poor Zechariah. So, Zechariah, not able to talk for 9 months. And my first thought when reading this was that if Zechariah faked this, now hear me out, he is a genius, okay? And here's why. in June, Sarah tells me, you're going to be a dad. And I was like, awesome. And a couple days later, I'm like, oh, Sarah, here's some names I'd love for our child. And Sarah says to me, Steve, I'm pushing this baby out of me. I'm going to name it. And I said, okay. Because I don't think there was anything good for me to say at that point. But now, here's the thing. If I had faked not being able to talk for 9 months and said that an angel told me that I was going to have a kid and that I didn't believe the angel, so he shut my mouth shut for 9 months. And by the way, the angel said the baby's name has to be John. I bet you she would have called the baby John. So, Zachariah, next level parenting here. Obviously, joking here, it does make me think that angel's being pretty harsh with Zachariah here. Zachariah had learned not to hope. He had learned not to anticipate becoming a dad because every time he hoped and anticipated that it would come, it would lead to disappointment. So much so that even when an angel of God tells him he's going to be a dad, he doesn't believe it. And the sad thing is he misses out on a lot of joy because he's afraid of hope. He's not able to talk to Elizabeth about this experience with the angel. He's not able to talk with Elizabeth about this baby's name is going to be John. And he's not able to talk with Elizabeth that this baby is going to change the world and prepare the world to hear about Jesus. He misses out on joy because he's afraid of hope. Are we missing out on joy because we're afraid of hope? You know, maybe this Christmas, you're remembering a loved one who's no longer with us, and maybe relationships are tough, and maybe finances are tough. Have we given up hope that God can bring light into those situations? Have we given up hope that God can change those situations around and make things better? Or are we anticipating God to move? I encourage you, no matter how hard it might seem right now, to keep hope. Hold on to hope and anticipate that God is going to do something huge this year, and I want you to fully anticipate the joy of it. I don't want us to miss out on joy because we're afraid of hope, because I believe God wants to do good things this year. I believe he wants to see people healed. I believe he wants to see lives transformed. I believe he wants to see you used to bring the gospel to people and people to come to know Jesus. So hold on to hope that God will perform a miracle this year. And if it doesn't seem like the miracle came, hold on to hope that it's coming. Elizabeth and Zachariah were hopeful for decades and had decades of disappointment. But God came through, so hold on to hope that God will move. So Zachariah comes home, meets Elizabeth, and Elizabeth seems totally fine that he can't talk. She's really, really happy about that. And I started to think, I'm like, yeah, Sarah would probably be pretty happy if I just didn't say anything throughout the whole 9 months of her being pregnant. So it makes a lot of sense. Elizabeth is obviously very happy with Zachariah, so much so that she comes pregnant. And yeah, there you go. You'll get it. After she becomes pregnant, she says this: how kind the Lord is. He's taken away my disgrace of having no children. And to really understand Elizabeth here, you need to understand the culture that she's in. The culture we have now, many people choose not to have children. And there are many people who struggle with infertility. And that can be devastating for people who are going through it. All of that was true then as well. Plus, it was seen as a blessing from God to have children, and it was seen as a curse from God to not have children. And it would seem like there was sin in Elizabeth's life that she wasn't able to conceive. And Elizabeth took all of that on. She took all that weight and thought, what am I doing wrong here that I'm not having a kid? And it's a pretty natural thing to do. If our circumstances aren't right, we start to ask ourselves, well, what am I doing wrong? And sometimes that's a good question. Sometimes there's things that we're doing that are leading to the circumstances that we have. Sometimes stuff just happens and it's not related to what we're doing. It's not necessarily related to any sin that's going on in our life. I mean, we learn that from Elizabeth and Zechariah. It says in the Bible that Zechariah and Elizabeth were righteous in God's eyes, careful to obey all of the Lord's commandments and regulations. And they had no children because Elizabeth was unable to conceive, and they were both very old. Righteous, following God's commands, doing the right thing, still struggling with this. And to them, it felt like they were disgraced. What is causing you to feel disgraced? Maybe it's similar to Elizabeth here, and maybe it's infertility. Maybe it's a financial situation. Maybe you've been let go on a fork. Maybe you failed a test. Maybe stuff like that is going on. It doesn't necessarily mean there's sin in your life that's causing you that to happen. Elizabeth and Zechariah were righteous, and this was still happening. And God wants to take away that disgrace. It might not always look like what we want it to look like, but I believe that God has for every one of us a path forward that's going to lead into blessing away from feeling disgraced. And Elizabeth now, she's full of joy. God has taken away her disgrace, as she puts it. She's pregnant. She's enjoying her quiet time with her husband now. She's wonderful. And several months later, a relative of hers, Mary, becomes pregnant. And Mary's probably a niece or a younger cousin of Elizabeth. And they had a pretty good relationship because as soon as Mary found out that she was pregnant, she went on a 9-day long journey to go find Elizabeth and tell her the news that she's pregnant. This is incredibly different to what Elizabeth's going through. Mary is young. She's excited. So much so, she went on this big journey to go tell a relative. The 6 months that Elizabeth had been pregnant, she had been in complete hiding, telling no one. A lot of people believe that she was in hiding because she was afraid of a miscarriage. She was afraid of showing the world that she was hopeful to once again see that it's just going to end in disappointment. And Mary had this great visit with Elizabeth, and I think she taught Elizabeth a few things. I think she taught Elizabeth how to hope and how to anticipate. You know, Mary, when finding out the news, was excited. She said to the angel, may all of these things come true. She goes and tells her relatives. She's excited. And Elizabeth learned to anticipate from Mary. And I believe our church today can be full of Elizabeth, people who struggle to anticipate and struggle to hope. I can be an Elizabeth at times. I think sometimes we think our doubt is wisdom, and we crush the hopes and anticipations of younger people. And let me give you an example to explain that a little bit. We have several youth in our youth group who go downtown on a regular basis, and they hand out food and socks, and they pray for the homeless downtown. And I've been with them a couple times, and the youth leaders have been with them several times, and I think it's amazing what they do. And it reminds me a lot of what I did about 10 years ago. I just got back from New York, and I wanted to end homelessness in Victoria. That was my goal. Yeah, it didn't work. Yeah. So I moved right downtown, and I most nights I would go downtown and meet with homeless people, and I'd hand out food, and I'd hand out socks, and I'd talk with people, and I would pray for people. And a couple years into it, I was talking with this one man, and giving him some food, and he was on the same street corner I met him 2 years ago, struggling with the exact same things he had been struggling with 2 years ago. And at the end of that conversation, as I walked away, I gave up. I said, Steve, this isn't going to work. That it's not working. You doing all this is in vain. Nothing's going to change. Homeless people are still going to be homeless. You're not going to change anyone's life. Just give up. And I didn't. And I was wrong to do that. I was wrong to give up hope. And I have to change my mind now, because I can't tell the students what they're doing won't have an impact. I can't tell the students that what they're doing won't help to end homelessness in Victoria. I can't tell those students that what they're doing won't help to bring people to Jesus. I can't tell those students that what they're doing won't transform lives. Just because I didn't see it in my past doesn't mean it's not going to happen through them in God's future. We need to learn to anticipate from those who are younger, more hopeful, to know that God is going to do something huge, because he will. Mary came to Elizabeth excited to have a son. Elizabeth didn't end up shutting her down and just saying, because she had a tough experience, she didn't say it's not going to work out, it's going to be difficult, all that. She was excited with Mary and hopeful for her future. And Elizabeth was able to teach Mary too. She taught Mary what blessing is. When they first met, in three verses in the Bible, Elizabeth tells Mary how blessed she is three times. This is what it says when they first meet. A few days later, Mary hurried to the hill country of Judea, to the town where Zechariah lived. She entered the house and greeted Elizabeth. At the sound of Mary's greeting, Elizabeth's child leaped within her, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. Elizabeth gave a glad cry and exclaimed to Mary, "God has blessed you above all women, and your child is blessed. Why am I so honored that the mother of my Lord should visit me? When I heard your greeting, the baby in my womb jumped for joy. You are blessed because you believed that the Lord would do what he said." Elizabeth teaches Mary what blessing is. And she says how blessed Mary is, but by most standards today, we wouldn't consider Mary to be blessed. Mary was 14, not yet married, pregnant, hadn't told her husband yet about the baby. She was afraid he was going to divorce her. She was afraid of being a single mom. She had just gone on this difficult 9-day-long journey on her own. That doesn't sound like blessing to me. And what we learn from Elizabeth is that blessing isn't wealth. It's not comfort. It's not health. You know, so often we think of blessing as, you know, bank account being full, relationships are great, family's fantastic, job's doing well. But the problem with that being our definition of blessing is it doesn't come that often. people are sick. Money's tight. Life's tough. Blessing isn't all of that stuff. Blessing is actually being inside of God's plan for us. And this Christmas is maybe one of the best lessons we can learn from Elizabeth, that a blessed Christmas isn't Christmas with all of our loved ones around, a warm fire with lots of presents under the tree. That's a nice Christmas. And I like nice Christmases. Who likes nice Christmases, right? Yeah. I hope you have a nice Christmas, but I don't really care all that much. What I really hope is that we have a blessed Christmas. And a blessed Christmas might mean less presents under our own tree because we took part in Serve the City Christmas to be a blessing to families who might have that need. Blessed Christmas might be spending less time with certain people, more time with those who are lonely and in need of community over the season. A blessed Christmas might mean volunteering or donating some of our time and money to certain things. And it's not necessarily comfortable, but it's being inside of God's plan for us. And sometimes when you do that, you go against the grain. A few weeks ago, Steve told us to write out everybody we're going to give a present to this year and to cross off everybody who you just feel obligated to give a gift to. And he said, they're only going to be mad at you for a year. And Steve is totally fine with people being mad at him for a year. That's how he survived being a pastor for 30 years. And I don't want people to be mad at me for a year. That sounds terrible. So I just go with the flow and try and make everyone happy and do the same thing we always do. But God's plan for us over Christmas isn't just going with the flow. It's about doing what we feel God calling us to do instead of what we feel pressured to do by society and our family and friends. And Elizabeth had this challenge when the baby was born. In Luke 1:57, the story goes on. It says, when it was time for Elizabeth's baby to be born, she gave birth to a son. And when her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had been very merciful to her, everyone rejoiced with her. When the baby was 8 days old, they came for the circumcision ceremony. They wanted to name him Zechariah after his father. But Elizabeth said, no, his name is John. What, they exclaimed? There's no one in your family by that name. So they used gestures to ask the baby's father what he wanted to name him. He motioned for a writing tablet, and to everyone's surprise, he wrote, "His name is John." Instantly, Zechariah could speak again, and he began praising God. Awe fell upon the whole neighborhood, and the news of what had happened spread throughout the Judean hills. Everyone who heard about it reflected on these events and asked, "What will this child turn out to be?" For the hand of the Lord was surely upon him in a special way. You see, everyone wanted to follow the traditions, and it was the tradition to name the baby after his father. Just like it's tradition for us to dip into the line of credit every year to buy gifts for the kids. Just like it's tradition for us to stuff our food full of faces full of food. Oh my gosh. That'd be a weird tradition. tradition for us to, you know, maybe not spend time with certain relatives over the year. Elizabeth was confident enough to break tradition and follow God's plan. So what is God calling us to do this Christmas? You know, maybe spend time with those who are lonely. Maybe spend less money on those who have everything and spend more on those in need. Maybe it's even just time in quiet, reflecting on Jesus over this season instead of getting caught up in the busyness of it all. I was driving to church this morning at 6:30 a.m. on a Sunday, and I was getting passed on the right by like 7 drivers. Calm down, all right? We just got to slow down, spend some time reflecting on what Jesus has done for us. So this Christmas, a few reminders. I'm going to close with these. First, anticipate God moving this year. Don't give up hope that God is going to do something huge. Elizabeth and Zechariah waited decades hoping that God would do something. And after years and years and years, God came through, but they missed out on some joy because they lost hope. Hold on to hope that God is going to do something big. He's going to bring light into your situation. It'll bring you joy. Second, know what blessing is. Mary was afraid of being divorced. She was afraid of being a single mom on a tough journey all on her own, her plans out the windows. Yet she was blessed because she was inside of God's plan. We can all be blessed this Christmas by listening to God's plan for us. So instead of striving for wealth and health and comfort, let's strive to be a part of God's plan and be blessed through that. And third, God's plan is better than our tradition. The tradition was for Elizabeth to name her son after the father. But she went with what God's plan was and named him John. You know, this Christmas, there are things that we do just because of tradition that might be against God's plan for us. It's not in God's plan for us to go into debt because of Christmas. Maybe it's not in God's plan to ignore that relative this year. Maybe it's in God's plan to start a new tradition. Maybe it's in God's plan to invite your neighbor over for dinner. Maybe it's in God's plan to invite your friend or neighbor to our Christmas Eve service. Maybe it's in God's plan to volunteer somewhere. Don't be afraid to skip out on something, even if it's tradition. And don't be afraid to go against the grain this Christmas. It's what Elizabeth did. And because of that, she had a son who prepared the world to hear about Jesus, who changed the world forever. So I pray that we have a blessed Christmas this year. And let me pray for you guys. God, thank you so much for this story, that we get to join in your blessing as we follow your plan for us, God. And I pray that we will be a church that anticipates and hopes that you are going to do something big this year in our lives as a church, in this city, in this world, God. I pray that we hold on to hope. I pray that as we hold on to hope, we experience the joy of knowing that you're going to do something, God. And I pray for us now as we head off into our busy weeks in Christmas season, God, I pray that we fearlessly follow your plan for us. fearlessly live the life you have called us to live, God. Pray that we have a blessed Christmas. In your name I pray.